using those always or never statements can act as like a big exaggeration of things. Like, you always do this when we get together with your friends, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Or you never say I love you when we're around your family, or something like that. Just like exaggerating something, again, using always or never statements, to me are huge exaggerations and generally aren't at all true.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast.
Songs I know I did. Forcing me to form myself to fit.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about how to take the fight out of your fights. Everyone gets into fights or arguments with the people that they're close to, but today we're going to talk about the difference between fighting fair and fighting dirty, as well as some proactive steps you can take to de-dirtify your arguments.
Yeah, get that dirt out of here.
Wow. Yeah, just scrub it out. Scrub it.
Yeah.
Good.
Scrub it all up and down. I mean, honestly, though, we've all fought dirty, haven't we? I mean, I know I have.
Yeah.
I definitely have a long track record of fighting dirty. I still do sometimes. I think that I feel very fortunate in being regularly on a podcast where I talk about like communication tools every week, as well as like helping people to, you know, like working with clients to de-dirtify their communication, that at least helps me to catch myself, I think, a little bit faster when I know I'm slipping into some bullshit, essentially. But
honestly, I'm really glad to hear that, like, you do that sometimes too, that like you're not completely perfect when it comes to your relationship conflicts.
Emily, are you kidding me? Have you not talked to Jace? I thought for sure Jace would be the first person to throw me under the bus of not being perfect.
He is incredibly kind and giving, and not like he's not gonna like throw you under the bus. No,
well, that's nice.
He's not like that. Yeah,
maybe a small
the only
bus.
Oh, just a small bus.
Yeah.
The only time when I've ever seen you fight dirty is during our radars, during our scrums,
our professional scrums between the three of us.
Yeah.
Sometimes I fight dirtier in those than I do in like my personal relationship sometimes, which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, though, over the past, I guess, almost 6 years, Dedeker, like, it's... Mm-hmm. Definitely changed. Like, I think for both of us,
well, that's good.
Our ways of addressing conflicts is
better.
Oh yeah, is much less on just sort of like winning at any cost, which is kind of what I think a lot of us are taught fighting is and how it should be. And you know, you just want to be the one who's winning. To a much more constructive sort of thing, which I think has grown out of other stuff we talk about on the show, like radar or nonviolent communication or kind of other tools to help kind of even prevent some of those, or at least give a better space for having them. So I've definitely, I was thinking about that actually just the other day, of just like how night and day different that is from a few years ago when we would be upset or fighting about something.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
That's really great.
So I want to give a little shout out callback to our episode 151, Conflict 60, Crash Course.
Almost 60 episodes ago.
Yeah,
that is amazing.
60 years ago. Actually, it was December 2017, if you want to go back and check. I think that was the first time that we covered specifically this topic head on of like finding essentially rules of fair engagement or some best practices for kind of setting yourself up for your fights or arguments to be more productive. And what we covered in that particular episode, we started out from a place of like three base assumptions. And I want to cover those again before we dig into our topic today. And our first base assumption that we're going to carry with us today is that conflict, disagreements, fights are inevitable in any human relationship. There are very few relationships you'll experience in your life, whether it's a family, friend, romantic, sexual relationship, that are totally
coworker.
yeah, yeah, coworker relationship. It's very rare that you'll have a relationship that's totally conflict-free, proud to be, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then kind of going along with that is that if conflict is present, it doesn't mean that the relationship is necessarily unhealthy. Meaning, you know, if you disagree on stuff, if you don't have exactly the same brain as each other, that's natural and that's
which
okay.
Which you probably won't.
And that if you disagree, it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with that relationship.
Yeah. And then finally, conflict can be a really great opportunity for personal growth and also the growth of the relationship specifically. And we found four specific ways where fighting can actually be good for a relationship. So the first way is going to be that fighting forces you to confront any challenges in your relationship head on. So often, like, if you're not ever talking about things that are challenging in a relationship, they can kind of fester, they can kind of grow. So if you are actively engaging in arguments sometimes in a productive manner, then you can really target those specific issues head on and have the opportunity to confront them. And that's really important in any type of relationship.
Yeah. And building on that, it also allows issues that you have between the two of you to have a chance to come to light and be resolved, as opposed to staying bottled up until they eventually boil over because someone can't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And conscious fighting or arguing can allow for exploration of what our own boundaries are or what makes us feel hurt or neglected by our significant other, that it can kind of, you know, inspire you to think about and examine those things a little more deeply while also hearing those from your partner.
And with all of these things, ultimately that can create more intimacy with your partner, because again, you can get a better understanding of their needs, of your specific needs, of your wants, and your mutual, just like things that you want for your relationship and for your life. And also really what makes them feel offended or neglected in a relationship. And those are incredibly important things to know whenever you're in a relationship with someone.
Yeah, something we talked about, I believe we talked about this when we did our boundary or basics of boundaries episode, is that sometimes we don't know our own boundaries or we don't know our partner's boundaries until we bump up against them in some way. And yeah, that's not necessarily anyone's fault. It's not like you're consciously holding out on someone or like not expressing your boundaries. It really is. Sometimes that's the only way that we learn in the first place. Ooh, that's a boundary for me, or ooh, that's a boundary for this other person. And that's actually a good thing to kind of, I see it as kind of like when you're playing a video game and you like unlock a portion of the map that was all cloudy and foggy. And then now it's unlocked. Now you kind of know where you're navigating and where you're going.
That's a great metaphor. Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
Now, however, all of these things, you know, kind of coming in with these assumptions and acknowledging all the good things that conflict and arguments and fighting can produce in a relationship, that's all predicated on the fighting and the arguing itself being based on a foundation of fair play, or some people call them, you know, rules of fair engagement, basically on a foundation of the communication being good and the fighting itself being productive. You know, like fights that are unproductive or that are just hurting the other person or that are stirring up a bunch of negative emotions all the time without resolution, that kind of conflict is not the thing that is going to be moving the relationship forward and generating intimacy and things like that. So I think that was kind of what we wanted to dig into in this episode, is finding the distinction between what is the conflict that is productive versus what is the conflict that is unproductive or fucking dirty.
Yeah, and just to throw this out there for other people like me who maybe are listening to this and going like, like using the word fighting and saying that can be a good thing, like that's, like, I agree with you, listeners out there.
I guess it does
there.
Have, like, a negative connotation.
Like, I wouldn't use the word fighting for any of this, but more like, you could say arguing or, you know, some kind of conflict.
Disagreeing.
That can be productive. And so I just wanted to kind of throw that out there in case there's anyone who's frustrated by using the word fighting. Mostly we just like the alliteration of fighting fair. Or fighting dirty is like an expression people use. So, you know, just so you understand, we don't mean like...
pure SEO.
Yeah, it's pure SEO. So don't worry about it too much. But
it does,
yeah.
It does remind me, you kind of making that little aside, I just downloaded on my Kindle Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a well-known Buddhist author and writer and figure. He put out this series of books that are like how to love, how to walk, how to eat. And it's all about like mindfulness and meditation and stuff like that. But the one that I downloaded was How to Fight. And it's the same thing. It's like, obviously Thich Nhat Hanh coming from his, you know, Zen Buddhist background is not teaching us about like how to punch each other, either verbally or physically or things like that. But it is about these kind of things, about like coming up against conflict and disagreement and finding a way for it to be both mindful and compassionate and as fair as possible.
Nice. Yeah.
Nice.
I'd also highly recommend that book because it's only like $6 or something right now.
Oh, sweet.
Downloading it right now.
Okay, great. Okay. So that being said, let's talk about what fighting dirty actually looks like. And because I think it is really important to talk about the negative things, because sometimes we don't realize, sometimes if some of these behaviors come from like our family of origin, we cannot even be aware that we're doing them or not even be aware that these are not productive things. It's just like, this is what we saw. And so this is what you go to in an argument.
Yeah. Like I know a lot of people will, you know, they'll argue a lot, say in their relationship, and they'll defend it by being like, oh yeah, that's what good relationships are like, or that's what my parents always did. And like, that makes us more intimate. It makes us better. Right. They say those things like we were just talking about earlier. And kind of the question I always have is like, is it though? Like, it depends what that fighting looks like, what that arguing looks like. And sometimes I think if we don't know what bad, problematic, potentially toxic fighting looks like, we might not even recognize it if we're doing it or even doing parts of it. It's not like a binary, like you're either
it's a toxic very intimate thing
or constructive. You could be somewhere in between, but kind of learning what are the things that are going to be a problem.
Right. So we came up with three broad categories that like fighting dirty or toxically or non-productively kind of falls into. And so I'm just going to review those really quick before we dive into the specifics. So the first category is that fighting dirty is unclear and distracted. The second is that it is aggressive. And the third is that it's disempowered, static, and reactive. But let's dive into the first one here.
Yeah, so unclear and distracted is the first one. And this is an interesting way in which to put it. But I think, like, if you come into an argument without really knowing what you are looking for, if you, like, want something from your partner, but you really don't know what that is, I think that it can lead to an unclear or a distracted fight occurring. So an example of that is being really unspecific or vague about what you're asking for, not being direct about like, hey, this is the thing that I felt didn't go well in this interaction, or I felt, you know, triggered by X word that you said to me, or something along those manners. If it becomes like really unspecific or vague, if it's like talking about maybe just your emotion rather than in kind of like a broad sense rather than like a specific thing that occurred, then that can be a challenging way in which to like hear, you know, your from your partner that you have an issue, because they're not going to really know how to address that head on.
Right. Like an example would be what? Something like, you know, you're always disrespecting me. It's kind of this vague like, statement, right?
The other day you were being really disrespectful or something like that. Even instead of being like, hey, like I felt hurt when you mentioned my mother, you know, did this thing the other week when we were together. I don't know. Like instead of being super specific about it, you just kind of like throw out an always or never statement regarding like how your partner is in general.
Yeah, I think I've also been on the receiving end. I'm trying to remember of a partner, you know, just being like, I just feel like you're like you've just been acting weird lately.
Yeah,
and like that's it.
Like
just
you
like you've been
angry
acting weird
all the time, or you like pulling away from me. I know it's all like vague comments. It's like, okay, I have no idea what that means, what I was doing. Like, can we take a step back and kind of address like specifics here? And if you're not able to give those specifics, then it becomes not very productive.
Yeah, it's kind of moment. it's like fighting with an amoeba, sort of, I guess, is the image that came
to
mind
ditto,
for me.
No.
With a ditto, yeah.
That's like the best metaphor that I had in my head, the Pokemon ditto. And then the next one is going to be exaggeration. So again, in my opinion, like using those always or never statements can act as like a big exaggeration of things. Like, you always do this when we get together with your friends, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Or you never say I love you when we're around your family. Or something like that, just like exaggerating something, again, using always or never statements to me are huge exaggerations and generally aren't at all true.
Yeah, it could, I think exaggeration could also be like hopping to the assumption first. So for instance, if it's like, if the behavior that you see is like, oh, I notice like you're not affectionate to me in front of your family, or you don't say I love you in front of my family, that it could be hopping to like, you're embarrassed of me. Or you don't love, you know, it could be hopping to this very extreme place. Yeah, that does seek to, although it's very dramatic, does ultimately just kind of conflate what the actual issue at hand is.
Totally. Or like it's seeking to get, I don't know, a rise out of your partner, or hopefully or probably them saying like, no, of course I love you. But instead you're like putting it in this kind of dirty, mean way. Exaggerated manner. So yeah, those are two unclear and distracted fighting dirty methods.
Yeah, the next two are kind of related to each other. They're sort of two sides of the same coin, let's say. And this first one is not sticking to a particular topic and instead kind of combining things. It's like, we started this fight because I was upset at you for not putting your dishes away after you had a snack. And then I came and had to clean them up later. And then as we're arguing about that, then I'm suddenly arguing about you coming home late the other night and not texting me first. And then it morphs into me being upset about the fact that you were late wishing me a happy birthday. Or, right, like you're just
months
kind of...
Months ago, yeah.
Right, where you just kind of intertwine and intermix all of these different things rather than staying focused. Right. Or trying to kind of find like, what's the common thread here? Right. It's like, I'm feeling upset, so I'm just going to reach out for like whatever memory I can grab. And then the other side of that is switch tracking, or nickelbacking, as we like to call it.
Oh my God.
We did this. This was in the Communication Hacks Booster Pack episode from a little while ago. I forget which number right now. But this is the one where One person comes and says, I'm upset because you didn't text me that you were going to be home late. And then the other person responds by saying, the way that you just told me that you didn't think that was okay was really disrespectful. And the fact that you said it in front of someone else or whatever, where you kind of talk past each other. It's like one person's trying to talk about one thing and the other's trying to talk about a different thing. Oftentimes, it's one person talking about the way that the top person talked about the first thing, although it doesn't always have to be that. But that's kind of like the classic switch tracking example. So kind of similar to like meandering around, but this one kind of goes like from two different directions. And then the next one that Emily kind of brought up a little bit earlier with the multiple entwined topics is bringing up issues from the past, particularly things that have already been resolved or have already been forgiven, or have worked toward some kind of completion with that, is bringing those back up to then kind of further support why you're upset or why your partner's upset or something. It goes along with that, like grabbing for multiple entwined topics.
Yeah, I think this is a really dangerous one and carries a lot of ammunition with it, because especially if you know, as the partner who was maybe the initial offender, you know that like that thing that your partner is bringing up really hurt them the first time out, but you feel that you made progress on that issue. You feel that like it is resolved, and then for them to come back and bring it up again and use it again as like a, well, here's another reason why you don't love me enough or something. That can be a really fighting dirty tactic, in my opinion, and be a really challenging place to go. So again, I'll bring this up, and it's not always to be used, but I did have a relationship therapist tell me once, like, if it hasn't happened within the last 2 weeks, don't bring it up. Like, try to not go back to, like, past infractions that are more than 2 weeks old. Like, let bygones be bygones in those situations, especially if you have already resolved those issues.
Yeah, I like the that reason... better is like the idea of like, is it resolved versus, you know, mm-hmm. if something happened 2 weeks ago you haven't talked about yet, that's one thing.
Sure.
Right?
That's yeah, not, but if then, it's resolved.
Yeah, that's not fair to be if like, it's you can't
if
bring
it's
that
a
up.
Year or years old, though, right. if it's a right. year or years old, then there's yeah. like it's going to be okay.
Right. Well, that's why I think this one can be so tricky and so easy for many of us to slip into is because I think that if you're feeling the urge to bring up something from the past, you know, it's like either that's just like your own personal BS and you're like, you're kind of trying to find ammo and like, you know, kind of trying to fight dirty. Or that means this is actually not resolved, you know, like actually this needs time and space if this still feels like a sticking point for you. And it's okay to make that time and space to actually resolve these unresolved things. Or it's an indicator that there's something systemic going on that is not yeah. okay. Like maybe it's an abuse situation, you know, and I think that's why like it's so easy for us to fall into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So moving on to the next category, which is fighting dirty is aggressive. And we're going to go through these. I think unintentionally we kind of ordered these from like most extreme to least extreme or less extreme. Mm-hmm. Because when we think about an aggressive fight, you know, obviously we can go to a place of like, yeah, you know, using physical violence or even threats of violence within a fight is not only just clearly fighting dirty, but also abusive and really unacceptable. So, you know, we know that that's clear, but kind of scaling back, it can include, you know, aggression can include things like physical outbursts, such as throwing things, punching walls, punching objects. Even if it's not physical violence directed at your partner, it can be physical violence that's still expressed in front of your partner, which can mm-hmm. still be damaging and scary and very unproductive. It can be things like personal attacks on the partner, which can be things like insults, verbal abuse. It can be like attacking that person's behavior or being extremely like unproductively critical of that person's behavior. It can include things like going after a partner's weak spots or quote unquote punching below the belt, like and I
insecurities.
Think, yeah, or going for their insecurities. And I think, you know, this is definitely that moment in a fight when you're not in productive mode and you're in like trying to win mode, it can be really tempting to go there because it's like, especially if you've been with someone for a long time, it's like, you know, their weak spots, you know, the things that hurt their feelings, you know, the things they're insecure about. And I know definitely in my experience in some of the really bad or like toxic fights I've had, it's definitely that when it's like, I feel like I'm losing or I feel like I've been hurt. And so I feel like I need to hit back by making some kind of dig or some even a passive dig that I know is going to like hurt my partner right where it hurts the most. And so again, even if you're not using actual physical outward violence, like there can still be this aggression in the way that you approach this particular fight or the way that you handle your partner in this particular fight.
Yeah, I think that Emily was kind of hinting at this earlier, but this bleeds in a little bit to like the bringing up past resolved issues, where it could be like, I think it could, like, I guess the extreme example would be something like, well, this is why your ex left you, is over this same stuff, right? Something that like, you know, is a pain point, that's like a sore point. Or it could even be something with us. So like, oh, see, this is exactly why, say it's something that you resolved earlier that your partner did because of some deep insecurity of their own, that is something you've talked about and worked through, then bringing it up later and being like, well, it's just because of all your insecurity, just like you did this other thing from before, or just like your selfishness that you did before, right? Like these you can kind of use that bringing up of past issues as a way of like personally attacking or attacking something on someone that, on a topic that you feel like you've already won.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Like you've had that conversation and maybe they did admit, yes, I was wrong. I did something shitty and I'm going to work to repair that, right? You've already resolved that. It's like going back to that one because you know they've already lost. And so you can keep winning that one when you're afraid you're not going to win the current one.
Right.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, that's tough. Again, on the aggressive side, yelling or screaming or even raising your voice, that can be really powerful and really hard to be on the receiving end of. I know from experience, definitely I've been in relationships where people have yelled and really who are quite much bigger than I am. And it feels, it can feel very vulnerable and it can feel very aggressive and very awful in those moments. So I definitely urge you all out there to temper that if you can, because that can be really scary in a way that physical or threatening violence can be. It is almost a threat of violence in a way. It can be when that like intense aggression is thrown at you. It can feel, it can feel abusive and it can feel pretty awful.
Yeah.
And then also this is a little bit less on the scale of aggression, but just even initiating argument or a fighting at a really unproductive time when like your partner is clearly tired, when they're busy, when you're in public maybe, or just ambushing your partner out of the blue when they're in the middle of something, maybe when they're at work, or just even when they've directly gotten home from work and they clearly are tired from a long day,
or
just
kind about of like to leave aggressively.
About to leave for work, about to leave for something really important. And it's like, well, we really need to talk about this thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you actually? I don't know that you do.
Yeah, I've been on both sides of this one really badly.
Yeah, me too.
Sure.
And the yelling, like raising my voice or a partner raising their voice. Or like with my roommate, both of us raise our voices sometimes when we're arguing. And it's like, even if it's a situation where it's not even like Emily described, where there's like a physical power imbalance and a fear there, like even that, it's still not productive. Like that's not making that argument go any better. That's not letting us resolve that, even if we are equally matched. And I feel like sometimes people will use that to defend it. It's like, oh, we both yell at each other. But it's
like, is it, it's not ideal.
Yeah.
It's not ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, related to the aggression, you know, aggression often comes from a place of anger. You know, it's actually relatively natural to have these like physical responses in our body when we're feeling angry, you know, from your heart rate getting faster and your, you know, the rate of your breathing getting faster or feeling like this tingling, like, you know, feeling like your body getting ready for that, you know, fight or flight response. And I just want to give a callback to our episode 205 that we did pretty recently about anger itself being good for you and not necessarily being something to squash down. And I just want to clarify, we're going to talk about this more a little bit later in the episode, but like feeling angry or feeling like these like violent physical sensations coming up on you doesn't mean like you're a bad person for feeling that way. It doesn't mean that like you need to squash that down or repress it and you need to never feel that way. But it does mean that you probably need to take steps to have a good outlet for that, as opposed to using the fight or the argument itself as the container for that anger. But again, we're going to talk about that a little bit later on.
Yeah. So our third category here for what fighting dirty looks like is that it's disempowered, it's static, and it's reactive. So I feel like that one's a little bit hard to parse just from the title of it. So let's look at some specific examples. So the first of these is ignoring or procrastinating on dealing with problems or refusing to discuss them. Just being like, no, I can't talk about that now. And kind of over and over and over again, just not being willing to talk about the thing. It's that very sort of static, like, no, we're just going to keep things how they are because I'm not willing to discuss it. Or like Dedeker was talking about just now with anger, is bottling up or refusing to share your true feelings. And this, I feel like, can happen for a ton of reasons, right? It could be because you don't want to rock the boat. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It could be that, well, I was upset about this thing at a time when I couldn't bring it up, but now things are okay, and so I don't want to bring it up now and make the good times bad, so I'm just not going to. And it might not even be that like step-by-step thought out, but I've very much done this one, where I just won't bring stuff up at a time when we are calm because I want to just enjoy the good time that we're having. And so instead, that will bottle it up, and it'll get to a point where then I'll bring it up at a not as productive time to talk about it when I'm in the moment upset about it, right?
Yeah.
And then the other one is to just sort of drag out a fight rather than reaching actionable solutions. So very reactive. It's like we're just reacting to being upset. We're being upset and then kind of run out of
energy. Going round and round and around in circles.
Until we run out of energy and then it stops until the next time we fight again.
Mm. Right. Yeah, this is the kind of thing where it's kind of this tricky version of static in a fight where it can feel like the fight's ongoing, especially if you're dragging it out, especially if it's like, you know, you start the fight, someone has to leave for work, you continue the fight via text. Maybe you throw in some like silent treatment in between and then continue the fight via text later. And then like the person comes home and maybe we go to bed and don't talk to each other. And then the next morning we have the fight again. And it can feel like the fight's still going on in the timeline, but it's not going anywhere. Mm. So it's still actually static. Like we're not moving toward actionable resolutions. We're not moving toward trying to collaborate on this. It's just kind of like dragging out us, maybe like venting our negative feelings or just trying to hurt each other or trying to withdraw from each other. And so it is kind of this weird thing where it's like in the moment it can feel like not progress is being made, but actually it's kind of more of a like spinning the wheels, like just staying in one spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And to go along with that, just as you said, silent treatment or stonewalling, which is one of the Gottman Institute's Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Very important. It was stonewalling, just so those of you know what it is, it's really like withdrawing or closing off from your partner, just kind of shutting down from them. And it really can cause an argument or just anything in general to go nowhere. Because if you can't have a mutual understanding between two people, then you're not going to move forward and progress in the potential argument that you're having. So this is a really important one and a really challenging one to combat if you come up against it.
I feel like there are some very sneaky ways that this one can show up. Because I feel like for a lot of people, like the silent treatment, maybe we do it sometimes. But it's usually for like little bits of time.
Like a moment.
It's like a moment. And I think we kind of know that we're being a little bit childish by doing it because it is kind of a thing we're aware of, right? Like the cold shoulder or the silent treatment. But there's kind of more subtle ways of stonewalling, which is kind of pretending to be coming from a place of being very emotionally intelligent or emotionally understanding. Of saying like, well, these are just my feelings and you can't argue with my feelings. What they're saying is, I'm not willing to have this conversation. I'm right. I won't accept any conversation about it. And it's this tricky thing because there are times when just being really honest about like, these are my feelings and those, you can't just talk those away is true and is a valid thing to do. But there are other times where you can use that exact same description as a way of stonewalling and of just being like, nope, you have to agree with me or nothing.
See, that's really interesting because I thought you were going to go a different direction with like the sneaky ways that stonewalling and the silent treatment can come up. And it actually came up for me quite recently in my last radar with my partner, Alex, that kind of toward the end of a radar that had been like relatively conflict free up to that point, like we hit on a topic that kind of struck a nerve with both of us. And I got upset enough that I was like, okay, I need to halt. I'm going to take a walk and then come back. So I went out, I took a walk. I just like, you know, walked around the block and like went across the street and like sat down on a bench and like took maybe 10 minutes. Like I sat down, like started writing some stuff out like on my phone just to kind of clear my thoughts. And after doing that, started feeling actually quite better and felt like, okay, I feel like I'm ready to come back to this. And again, this was maybe only like 10 or 15 minutes. It was a relatively short period of time that I needed before I was ready to come back to the discussion. However, then in that moment, there was kind of like, I had that like devil on the shoulder, angel on the shoulder kind of moment where it's like the angel on my shoulder was like, okay, like you've had your venting time, you've had your halt time, you feel ready to come back to this now, you better go head back and like have a productive discussion now. But the devil was like, you should stay out for another 20 minutes just to like
get his goad.
Just to get his goat, I guess, or just to get him a little bit worried or just to like, it was not. Like, when I think about it now, I'm embarrassed because it's like the devil, like, had literally, like, nothing good to say about the situation. Helpful, yeah. Like, wanting to stay out for an extra 20 or 30 minutes was purely just, like, purely selfish, purely non-productive. But it's like, I still felt that. And I think that that can be a very slippery slope to being like, well, I'm going to like remove myself from the situation, either like go in the other room and lock the door, or like go out for a really long walk, or be out for hours at a time. And I can make the argument of like, well, I needed to halt and get out of the situation, when it's kind of like a mix of maybe halting combined with some stonewalling.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, do y'all get what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of halting. I am for the right reasons, but I really like, I generally am like, I want to continue this. Unless it's like a huge infraction in the middle of it, I'm like, I really want to keep going, because I think that I can piece together my thoughts best if we just like continue talking through it together.
Well, maybe it's a spiritual thing, because I know for me, that particular argument, really caught me is like, I felt my anger coming up, and I was like, I know if I just sit here and power through this, I'm going to say something really not nice.
Maybe that's it. See, because my chewer partner halts like all the time, a lot, more than me at the very least. And so I think maybe that's it. It's like a hope of like being able to collect one's thoughts in a productive manner, as opposed to like Jason and I think, who would both be like, well, let's talk about this together. Like, I'm just going to like throw some stuff out there and just listen to me for a second while I talk, instead of like sitting there quietly by oneself thinking about it before we go back to the conversation.
Yeah, I was thinking about this one recently, of just being like, you know, I think there are definitely times that I could get better at realizing when to halt.
Yeah, me too.
Just for a short amount of time, even for just like a couple minutes.
Interesting.
Which I think would be a good sort of kind of habit interrupt for things like raising my voice, or, you know, getting like physically agitated about something, of just like kind of training that sort of mental, like a circuit breaker, I guess, where it's like, I start feeling this way and like halt, emergency halt, you know, time out, like on How I Met Your Mother, where Lily and Marshall would do their like immediately pause an argument.
Everything stops.
Go take care of their lives and then come back, you know, kind of like that. I actually think that would be a really helpful thing, because I tend to be like Emily, where
like a,
I just want to power
like a micro
through
halt,
it. A little micro halt. Oh, I like that.
Something
yeah,
like
it's
that.
Just a micro halt.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Okay, maybe it is a spiritual thing, because when I think about it, I'm like, that gives me anxiety to think about micro halt.
Wait, why?
I don't know. I guess because when I think
you would
about
love
halting.
Halt.
No, I love halts. I do. Trust me, I do. But I think I'm I don't know, maybe I just need to experiment with it and try it. Jace, we can try it.
Okay.
Well, yeah, like
it. Yeah.
Like a speed halt.
I had it, or
mini
one
halt?
Of our mini halt. No, one of our patrons used the word timeout, like you just said. And said like that they and their partner will say the word timeout, and that means like everything is dropped regardless of what is happening in the moment, and you time out, and then like for 10 or 15 minutes or however long they decide, like they have to like just go to separate rooms and like cool off, and then maybe they can come back to the argument. And so that kind of provides like a safe word, almost, just like okay, we're timing out right now, and like anyone can say it for any reason. And I don't know. And it's better to me than just like the wishy-washy halt that sometimes happens. Like, you know, I really think that maybe we should halt right now, which to me, I'm like, no, we're fucking
okay.
not. Okay.
Well, hang
we're
on.
For a fucking
hang on.
Gonna
okay.
keep going.
I'm
gonna
jump in, because I think what I think makes for a more effective halt is when you call a halt on yourself and you're dedicated to just that. And it's never a hey, you need to halt. And it maybe even for the sake of safety, it's never a hey, we should halt. Because I think that can also be like a passive.
I like
way
that too.
Of kind
like
of implying
that.
Like, oh, you're getting out of hand. I find for myself, it definitely goes a lot better if I'm like, I need to take a break. I need to take a halt. I need to take a walk. Even
no,
if
I
feel
I
like it's the other person
hugely.
Who's more upset, but it rarely is. Usually it's me.
yeah. Like, no, I appreciate that very much, because then it's taking ownership for something, as opposed to being like, clearly you need to fucking calm down right now.
Yeah, because that
Which
just...
to me, I'm like, I am fine, okay? I am totally fine.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, it all comes out. Anyways, we have one more in this disempowering and static section, which is, like what we were just saying, only blaming or not taking responsibility and owning your own shit, which I think is huge and happens a lot in arguments. It is like, let's deflect, 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 and we're throwing everything at your partner and saying like, well, you're doing this and you're doing that and you're not, you know, showing me enough respect, whatever. I don't feel safe in this relationship.
I only acted this way because you did this thing.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Good. Any of the above.
I mean, bad.
Yeah. And instead of like being reflective, and I think it is an important thing. Yes, halt is great, but I think it can be really important to be reflective in the moment and to really like actively listen to what your partner's saying. And if they're like, hey, actually in that moment when you said X, Y, or Z, it really hurt and it really, you know, made me feel challenged. Like, why did you say that? Can we maybe examine that for a minute? And to be able to say like, hey, shit, why did I say that? Like, that was kind of uncool. Mm-hmm. Instead of just being like, well, obviously it was something you did that made me do that.
So the interesting thing is when we were writing this episode, I considered putting the like, you know, blaming and not taking responsibility under a different category. But then when I thought about it, like, I feel like that impulse to only blame on either your partner or some kind of external factor, I feel like that actually comes from a very disempowered place. I know the times that I've felt it's easier for me to be able to own up in an argument and be like, you know what, you're right. I shouldn't have said that, or I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry that I said that. Like, if I'm feeling disempowered, it's a lot harder for me to do that versus, like, if I feel more empowered and I feel like, you know, me coming clean or me taking responsibility is going to empower the situation and allow it to move forward, then for me, I find it a lot easier. It doesn't mean that it feels, like, good. You know, it's definitely humbling. But I don't know. I get this is just kind of like a subtle nuance thing that I feel like I'm starting to learn, at least about my own behavior, is that if I'm feeling like disempowered, then it's definitely a lot easier to go to a place of like, I need to try to win, or I need to try to save face, or I need to try to make sure that like you feel worse about this than I do.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then when we were reading about this, one of the things that came up that I was just like, shit, you're right, was this idea of a sign that you're fighting in a dirty way is if your objective is ever to win. And I was just like, oh fuck. Like that's just sort of the truth in that. And when I looked at this list as we were going through it, I'm like, so much of this comes from a desire to win. And that that's how we end up resorting to some of these tactics without even being aware that we're doing these shitty things, because it's just coming from a place of wanting to win. And that's something that we see it all around us, like this glorification of winning, or the idea that like an argument has a winner and that winning's a good thing. And that, you know, the reality of it is that arguments that do end with a winner, even if that's you, ultimately is going to hurt that relationship more than,
well, and it's also gonna have a loser, and that's
right.
And if that's your partner, that's shitty.
Yeah,
well, and that's the thing, is that that's gonna weaken and harm your relationship in a way that's eventually gonna make you both lose. So like, really, like, winning isn't even winning. It's not even just like, oh, winning sucks because it's good for the winner and bad for the loser. It's like, no, it's actually bad for both of you. It just feels good for the winner at that moment. So that, when I read that, I was just like, yes, there's something to this of like checking in with myself of like, am I trying to win right now? Like, am I concerned about winning right now versus am I concerned with a positive outcome or getting this thing resolved or finding a way for us to move forward and find a solution to this? Which is a good segue into our second half here.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I. So let's talk about what fighting fair actually looks like. What are the, you know, more positive, more healthy, more productive rules of engagement? What are going to be the things that need to be in place in order for an argument to still be productive? And it doesn't mean that, like, if these things are in place, that the argument's going to automatically just, like, feel great and it's going to be all like rainbows and butterflies. It'll probably still have uncomfortable emotions come up, but ideally, taking on a sense of fighting fair rather than fighting dirty is going to lead you to a more productive place, which means productive resolutions, which means less fights in the future, usually, is kind of the way these things worked out.
Right.
So, kind of to counterbalance our three categories of fighting dirty, we also have three categories that all the behaviors surrounding fighting fair tend to fall into. And so those three are being clear and focused instead of unclear and distracted. The second one is being compassionate instead of being aggressive. And the third is being empowered, actionable, proactive, instead of disempowered, static, and reactive. So let's dive into our first category.
Yeah, so that clear and focused category instead of the unclear and distracted. So again, in this category, you want to stay focused on one issue at a time and don't be vague about it. So again, really try to be very specific to something and say like, hey, this was challenging for me when you said X, or this made me feel X when you said Y. Anything along those lines. Just really be specific in it and try really hard not to be vague, because that's not going to be helpful to anyone. And then again, stick to the truth. Don't exaggerate. Don't generalize. Don't say always or never. Just be like, again, hey, this is the thing that I perceived happening. This is how it made me feel. Can we talk about that? Something along those lines.
Yeah. And then going along with that, like the examples Emily was giving, is to speak for yourself instead of speaking for your partner. Instead of saying something like, you disrespected me when you said this, it's saying, hey, I felt disrespected when this thing happened. It seems like such a subtle difference, but it makes that...
It's huge, though. It's so huge to say the I statements versus you statements.
Because then it's at least acknowledging the possibility that that's not what they intended, and mm-hmm. that you just felt that way. That doesn't mean the solution isn't going to be for them to change the way that they talk, or, you know, for both of you to do something, but it's just acknowledging the fact that they didn't, you're not sort of putting intentions in their brain, like words in their mouth.
Words in their mouth. Yeah.
You're inceptioning things into their brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've definitely been in situations, I've been on both ends of a fight going to a place of like, when you said this or when you did this, you were thinking X, Y, Z, or you must have been,
totally.
You must have been thinking like, you know, you must have been thinking like, whatever, I don't care about the relationship, or you must have been thinking, you know, and I've also been on the receiving end of that as well. And I think that it's kind of the same. It's like projecting these like intentions and thoughts mm-hmm. onto your partner instead of just kind of speaking from your own point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the next one is to stick to the present. Stick to what the actual issue is at hand, and don't bring up those issues from the past that have been resolved. We kind of talked about this one quite a bit before. I think you get the idea. Sometimes I feel like we can come up with a lot of ways to justify bringing those things back up, but to really try to stick to the issues right now and kind of, even if it might be tempting to just bring up a thing from the past, to maybe take a moment to go, you know what, I'm not going to go there. Let's try to focus on a solution to what's happening right now.
Yeah, because like ultimately, like, who is it going to help?
Right, right. Yeah, if it's something they can't go back and change.
I do just want to throw out there, unless it's like clear that it's like, okay, this thing from the past keeps coming up, so like we need to make time and space to actually resolve that. Like,
sure.
You know, because, you know, we've seen...
But if it was a single infraction once...
Right.
Or something.
Right. These things take nuance, and it's hard to like paint with a broad brush, like you should always do this or not do this, yeah. You know, and like we've heard of people weaponizing like this whole 2-week rule and, you know, making it so that you can't bring up things that you actually still are unresolved and upset that happened more than 2 weeks ago. It's like, you know, use your head, use your heart, you know, and again, if things from the past keep coming up for me, I'm saying like that's an indicator that something is not resolved, you know, and so actually give it the intentional time and space to resolve it, or don't bring it up if it actually is resolved.
Which then I think goes back to the first one, which is to stay focused on one issue at a time. And I think if you are having that realization, that's not an excuse to then just sort of sidetrack the actual conversation. But instead to go, you know what, I'm realizing this is a thing we need to talk about. Let's dedicate a time to that rather than it constantly hijacking other conversations, right?
Yeah.
And then the last one here in this clear and focused is give equal time for each person to talk. And this one, you'll have to kind of gauge for yourself how this looks. Maybe this is something just as simple as being mindful of that and just being sure that you give time to listen to your partner and resist the urge to interrupt and just jump in with your side of it, really give it time to listen. Or this could be something that you find with your partner you need to be very structured about. Some people suggest things like actually setting a timer, being like, you get 1 minute, and then I get a minute, and going back and forth like that, where you have sort of a third party, in this case, a timer, kind of telling you when you can or can't talk. You know, it could be different intervals of time, whatever, but just really being sure that each person is really getting time to talk.
So we're going to move on to our next category, which is that, you know, fighting fair is compassionate as opposed to being aggressive. And I'm going to start out by saying that this includes being compassionate to yourself and to your feelings when you're in the middle of the fight. And I'm going to bring up again the acronym that we learned about when we were researching the Anger is Good for You episode 205, which was ARIA. And it's this step-by-step process of first admitting that you're angry, restraining the anger in some way, then finding a way to express your feelings, and then coming up with action points or actionable steps that you and this other person can take together. So that means something like, first of all, having the courage to even say, hey, I'm feeling really angry right now, and then moving on to restraining that anger. Either it's, I'm going to go for a jog, I'm going to go for a walk, I'm going to go hang out in the other room and meditate for 10 minutes, or whatever. So the idea being that like you're precluding any kind of like violent expressions of that anger, whether it's yelling or throwing things or actual physical violence. I see that as being compassionate to yourself, you know, in choosing to do that is like being compassionate to your feelings, letting yourself feel the anger, giving yourself a place or a way to get those negative feelings out of your body in some way, and then coming back to it so that you can also show compassion and gentleness to your partner as well. Related to that, and the next one is, you know, avoiding personal attacks, avoiding degrading language. And this is something where we talked about this a little bit in like the conflict crash course episode. This, I think, sometimes requires some self-awareness of, I call it like checking what's in your arsenal, checking what are the things you whip out when you are angry, when you are hurt, when you are in a fight, when you are trying to win. For some people, it is going straight for the jugular with like personal insults. For some people, it's a much more roundabout, sneaky way of going at it, like maybe passive aggressive comments or sometimes backhanded compliments. Like, my thing is, like, your shit's going to find a way to come out, and just be aware of that and be on top of that and know when it's okay to be like, you know what, I'm kind of getting to this place where I'm much more prickly, or I know that I'm kind of coming after you and I need to step back and I need to calm down and I need to reapproach this in some way so that you can be compassionate and kind to each other. Yeah. And again, related to that is halting. You know, it is okay to halt. Like, recognize when you are hungry, angry, lonely, tired, drinking, sick. Horny got added to that one years ago, because I guess that's a thing that comes up too sometimes. But it is okay to be compassionate both to yourself and your partner by saying, you know what, I'm really tired. I know that you're really tired, or you told me you're really tired. Like, let's go to sleep. Or, you know what, we are drinking right now. Let's either stop drinking and sober up before we continue this, or let's table this and find a time tomorrow when we're sober where we can talk about this.
I think that second option's the more realistic.
Yes, the more realistic option, let's just say it. And I think when you say these things, it doesn't have to be a weaponized thing. Again, like we said earlier, it doesn't have to be like, well, you're too drunk, or you're too tired, or you need to shape up, or you need to calm down, or you need to halt. It can be this very compassionate thing of just like asking for that time and space. It can be very gentle. It can be, you know what, I really want us to have a good conversation about this, but I feel way too tired. So can we please find some time tomorrow to do this? You know, it can be delivered in a compassionate way that will help move things in a more productive direction rather than a more aggressive direction.
Yeah. To kind of go along with that, one should really respect the state of where their partner is at the present moment. So if they have been, you know, going through a lot of stuff at work, if things are really difficult for them during that time, maybe understand that and be like, hey, it's time to cut my partner a little bit of slack here. Or to realize that, like, bringing up certain things might not be the most productive. Just simply because they're not in the mood or in the correct emotional state to handle those types of things that I'm about to throw at them. Just sort of be mindful in those moments and really, like, understand that, hey, your partner may not be at their best to come at this situation in the way that you need at that moment. So mindfulness in these ways are really important. And also, if something occurs that causes a partner to cry, which I am a huge crier, anyone who is a longtime fan of this show and especially of the bonus content for our patrons knows that I am a huge crybaby. And it's really challenging when people say, like, well, you're just being, you know, you're just, what is it, victimizing yourself in this moment because, you know, you're being a crybaby or whatever, you're just being a victim. And it's like, no, I actually just, like, cry. Like, that's just what I do. But then I can, like, I process my emotions sometimes through that, and then I move on from them. But it kind of just happens. And it's like, instead of me getting angry, I cry. So, I don't know. I think that it's important to be respectful in those moments and not just, like, be like, well, you're crying at me. Instead be like,
wow,
maybe I'm just crying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think crying is such a charged thing, not even in the experience of crying itself, but in the ways that, like, we react to other people crying. Yeah. I think if you can have a conversation about this with your partner at a time when neither of you are crying, like, or fighting or whatever, like, I think it's a really interesting conversation to get into, because I found that, like, your family of origin, how your family dealt with crying can really shape how you react to it, or how often you cry or don't cry or whatever. Because, like, yes, sometimes people have experienced, like, weaponized crying from their parents sometimes, where it's like, oh, as soon as my mom cried, you know, as soon as mom didn't get what she wants, she would resort to crying and then I would feel bad. And they have that kind of weird negative association with crying. Or it may be something like, as soon as I cried, I would get punished for it, or I would get yelled at. And so I really try not to cry. Like, there's like a whole goldmine in there
it's
of
a challenge,
like, interesting stuff. And so I would definitely really encourage people, like, have a conversation, just like just examining that and share that with each other of like how crying was dealt with when you were young, or like what you, you know, what you experienced seeing people cry growing up. Because I think it could really inform how the two of you act when that happens in the context of an argument.
Yeah, I agree. And then the next one is just, as Dedeker said before, build your partner up. Again, acknowledge what they're feeling and what they've contributed to the conversation. So again, this can look like just in the moment being like, hey, like, I really know that you're trying here. Like, I'm listening to what you're saying. I really appreciate that you are doing X, Y, and Z to like help this issue. And I see the progress that you've made. And I really, really, you know, love that. Maybe we can still go a step further by doing whatever. But like, I do see that you're trying. And I so, so appreciate that. I think that that's huge. And that that is a way in which to acknowledge your partner for all of the great things that they're doing and the, you know, the progress that they made in any specific thing. It's really important to do that instead of just being like, well, you're not trying hard enough or you're not doing whatever. Instead, like, it's way better to keep moving forward and showing them your love and showing them that you care and that you can see the progress that they've made.
Yeah. Okay, so our third category now is about being empowered and actionable and proactive versus being disempowered and static and reactive. So the first of these is don't make your arguments public. Don't do them in front of people. With the exception...
People do that at the restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
It's totally awful. The worst.
It's so... And it, we just are like... Like, walk in, like, yeah. Like I don't want to go over to that table because they're yelling at each other. Mm-hmm.
Or yeah. Especially...
And then when someone gets up and throws something and walks away, it's like, do you want your check?
Ox.
Gosh, yeah. Or
Soup's ox.
This is also not just, like, public, but in front of family or in front of friends, things like that, right? Places where it could be humiliating or embarrassing to someone. Is, you know, find a place that is an actual private place where you can actually have this conversation, have this argument. With the exception of times where you realize this is, we need a third party, we need a mediator, we need a counselor, something like that. Obviously that's an exception. But just in general, don't be like trying to have your arguments in a place where you can make them lose face or something like that. Next one is along with that, is to make a plan to argue together. And I know that sounds silly and people are like, what are you talking about? But really, it's like things we talk about with Radar, which is dedicating a time each month where you're going to talk about your relationship. And that doesn't have to be just arguments. That's also
Is a section that we talk about.
Right. But it can also be talking about the good things that are going on, talking about what your plans are for the next month, whatever it is, but kind of finding a way to have a dedicated time to have this conversation. This could be something going along with halting. So you say we're too tired right now, or we're drinking right now, or I'm so angry right now. Instead of just saying the vague, we'll talk about this later, which can kind of turn into kind of a stonewalling situation, instead being like, we can't talk about this now. I have some time on Saturday in the middle of the day. We were going to spend some time together anyway. Could we finish talking about this then? Right? It's like actually making a plan so that you can both come to that ready and able to have that conversation and not as you're trying to head out the door or when you're tired about to go to bed. And then going along with that is, with the exception of taking breaks to halt, is to stick with it to the end, is actually see this through to a resolution rather than just, I need to get out all of my angriness at you. And then, okay, now we're done.
And now I'm leaving.
Right. It's like, no, let's actually get through this to the end where we get to a resolution, where we get to what are we going to do about this now to make it better instead of just vent. Okay, stop until the next time.
Yeah. This next one is, I like had a huge epiphany when I read this, but have a goal in mind when you come into an argument, which I think like almost none of us do. I don't know. I don't want to say always or never or whatever, but like, I feel like I really generally don't come into an argument with like a specific goal in mind. But I think it's really important to like give your partner the benefit of the doubt and expect that they will give you what you need and what you want from that argument, as opposed to being like, well, this is just going to go shitty again, but I got to bring it up because I'm pissed, like that kind of thing. Instead, really be like, okay, my goal is for my partner to understand me in this moment, or my goal is for the two of us to like mutually understand each other better, or for them to understand like what is challenging for me, or what is, you know, an insecurity that I have that they continually touch upon, or something like that. And for them to get it and for them to like change that behavior in the future, instead of, you know, just expecting them to continue on in the same way that they have. I think that's, when I read that, I was like, oh God, okay. Yep.
Yeah, maybe just to clarify, it's not about like, my goal is that they're going to agree to exactly this, but more like,
sure,
the goal is like,
it's a collaboration.
Like you said, Emily, the goal is to better understand why they're doing this and to find a way that we can work together that neither of us will be upset. It rather than they will do exactly X, Y, or Z, because then you're getting into the like, I just need to win, right?
No, I mean, sure. Yeah, exactly. But just it, definitely that collaboration goal, I think, is huge. And that hopefully, like, the thing that I need, which might be challenging, but might be a like, hey, I really need to be better understood by my partner, which I think is generally what most fights are about anyways, that gets resolved. And to go along with our radar, to make action points, to be like, hey, okay, you feel not good in a certain situation, so actionably, I am going to do these things, these actionable things, in order to make sure that that doesn't happen again. And to kind of make goals in that way to further your endeavor of like not, you know, triggering your partner in that way or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, the idea behind the action points, and I don't think, you know, every fight is not necessarily going to produce action points, you know, because sometimes it's like just by talking about this, we've resolved it and we understand each other and it doesn't feel like there's anything that needs to be put in place. But sometimes it is good to have things in place to know and for both of you to feel like you can trust that, like, okay, we're taking steps to make sure that, like, this doesn't happen again, or this kind of miscommunication doesn't happen again. And again, it is the kind of thing where it's like, I've definitely weaponized this myself of where it's like, well, what are you going to do to make sure this doesn't happen again? Or kind of trying to use it as a like, I need you to say the thing that you feel like you're to blame for. But this can also
Our partners are not mind readers.
Yes, but it can also be this very collaborative process. It can be just as easy as like, okay, cool. Like, I feel like we've both had our say. Can we sit down and come up with some action points that both of us can do? Or maybe starting by volunteering, like, okay, well, I think from hearing what you have to say, I think that what I can do is do X, Y, and Z. How do you feel about that? You know, can you give me some feedback on how that would feel? You know, and kind of starting that collaborative conversation around what are these specific things that we can do? And that is also part of leading to our last point, which is coming to a place of resolution or coming to a place where you feel like you're able to make up with each other. And now I know sometimes that like, sometimes you've both vented what it is that you want to vent. You both feel like the other person's heard what you wanted them to hear. Maybe you've come up with some action points of like, okay, well, maybe I'm going to try to do this and you're going to try to do this, you know, but maybe you still feel fucking pissed. I know I definitely I'm in that place sometimes where it's like, even though logically I know we've come to a place of resolution, but like my body still has this energy in it or this tension in it or this irritation in it. And I know in the past, that's definitely been the thing that encourages me to like just drag out a fight even past the point where it's been resolved, because I just still feel like kind of pissed even though things have technically been resolved. Which is why it's really important and can be really helpful to have some kind of ritual, some kind of formalized way to reconnect to your partner. And it could be, I don't know, it kind of depends on you and your partner to make this thing up for yourself. It could be, okay, great, let's take 10 minutes in separate rooms and just like take a breather and then let's come back together and like watch the next episode of our favorite show, or something like that. Or it could be sometimes being like, hey, can we do a quick little appreciation round? Mm-hmm. You know, where I can express, hey, like, thank you so much because I really feel like I was heard and I really appreciate hearing your apology about this thing. Or I really appreciate that I still felt safe. Or I really appreciate that, like, you didn't raise your voice. And, like, I could see that you made this effort, like, time where you can even appreciate each other, either about things that went down in the discussion itself or just about other things. It could be just, you know, I really appreciate how attractive your face is and things like that. But again, just to kind of start to discharge some of that, like, lingering aggression or, like, fight energy and generate kind of more of this, like, feeling of normalcy and more of this feeling of reconnecting to each other. If you want to go back to episode 186, our episode titled Reconnecting When You Don't Want To, there are definitely some other, you know, helpful tactics for employing, you know, being able to reconnect to each other and kind of bring things back to equilibrium, even when you're still kind of on the tail end of a fight.
So I hope that you all got something out of that. I know that I did, looking at these lists out there of fighting dirty and fighting fair. And I'm really interested to know, those of you out there who have tactics for fighting fair, and those of you also who listened to this episode and realized, like, hey, maybe there are some things that I'm doing that are dirty fighting tactics, and maybe I shouldn't be doing that anymore. I do want to hear about that as well, because the three of us definitely saw that in ourselves, I think, when we researched this episode. So, yeah, the best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. Leave us a voicemail at 678-MULTI-05. Or you can leave us a voice message on Facebook. Multiamory is created and produced by Dedeker Winston, Jace Lindgren, and me, Emily Matlack. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. And our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.